It's episode 1091, and it's the Relevant Podcast. Here in Orlando, I'm your host, Cameron Strang. And joining me from Loverland, Virginia, it's Jesse Carey.
Hello, hello.
From Nashville, Tennessee, artist, producer, mogul, Derek Miner.
What up, though?
Album releases August 25th. And yo, from Austin, Texas, author, speaker, podcaster, Jamie Ivey.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Jesse, did you know, did Dana tell you that when I drove back from Virginia the other day, I blew out a tire in Lumberton, North Carolina, and then I got a ticket in South Carolina. It was the most expensive car ride.
I know, you could have flown for that.
We enjoyed
having you. It was a great trip. You got to meet some friends, got to kick around the neighborhood. We walked around the lovely Virginia Beach oceanfront, went to some t-shirt shops. I have a situation that I wanted to run by you guys. Cameron visited my neighborhood. The second time he stayed over there, most of the houses before this sounds too bougie, most of the houses in my neighborhood were built like in the 80s, and basically every house in that area has like a swimming pool in the backyard, which is when they were built back in the 80s, everyone has it. When you move there, you want one, you got one. And so a buddy of mine, who Cameron met the other night, he was going out of town, and he said, hey, I bought a bunch of pool chemicals. My pool is going green. I'm reeling and jammed. Can you go put these in for me? I read the instructions, okay, and I put them in, and it took me, I did it over the course of days as instructed on the piece of paper, okay?
Crazy.
It took me days. We have like a neighborhood pool store where you take a little water sample in and they do the pool chemistry and they tell you the samples they need, okay? And everyone's name is in a system. After I got done with it, he went to the pool store with a water sample. They made an announcement over the thing that they had a perfect sample. They gave him a gold star and they stopped business and everyone in the store gave him a round of applause, okay?
What? That is the most suburban thing I've ever heard in my life.
I know.
Here's the thing. He didn't. I did it.
You did it. Okay.
I feel like I need to go in there and set the record straight. I think I need to tell them, listen, this guy came in. I think the files need to be updated. I think it needs to be updated on my part. And I want the round of applause. And next time he comes in, he should be shamed for accepting it. Do you guys feel like I'm in the wrong here?
I mean, I feel like you're in the right, but I don't know how you're going to do this, Jesse.
He left his pool green. You took it to perfection, and he got the round of applause.
And a gold star, and he got noted in the database that he had a perfect pool, okay? I used to be a lifeguard, okay? I used to maintain an apartment complex pool. I got pool of the pay period twice that summer. Twice, okay, at that apartment
complex. Pool of the pay period, that's what they called it.
Yeah, it was Subway gift card. Okay, big deal.
How'd you find out about this? Did your friend tell you, or did word spread?
No,
he was bragging the other night. He was when we were hanging out. He was bragging about his gold star.
This reminds me of the age old question that if you gave somebody some money and they went and bought a lottery ticket, who gets the money?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't even buy the lottery ticket, though. It would be like me buying the lottery ticket, me leaving it at his house, and he claimed it. That's more apropos. I'm just looking for recognition. That's all. Am I being petty in this, or do I need to set the record straight? I'm proud of you.
You are probably
I'm proud of you, bro.
The best.
That's fine. That's fine. But I,
Jesse, he got applause from seven people. You are getting acknowledged in front of 100,000 people.
That's fine, so, but that's I want huge. The applause that's from that huge. Seven because they're pool experts and very difficult.
Okay, if you're wanting a real answer, the Bible does talk about this. Mm. Let it go, man.
Come on.
The Bible says not to bear false witness against thy neighbor, Daniel.
The Bible says not to bear false witness.
I love it.
Which I feel like is basically what happened when he didn't stop the applause and call me and put me on speaker.
Yeah, exactly. Let me FaceTime the guy who's responsible.
He wants to say a few words here.
Yeah.
Jesse, I do have a question, not about your pool or your gold stars, but you said Cameron was up there. And the last time I was on the show, you talked about a building burning down.
Yeah, we walked
right
by. Did
they catch the people? What happened?
No, they actually, I'm glad you asked because I've been following the story very closely. They know it started in the attic of a t-shirt shop, but they said on the news at this point, they'll probably never know. It's a big mystery.
Jesse's theory, Jesse's theory is that one of the part-time workers was taking his smoke break up in the attic. If you smoke being in quotes.
Listen, exactly. That's it's pure speculation on my part. But Cameron, did I exaggerate how big of a mess that was?
It's an entire city block burned to the ground. And it still, weeks later, smells like char in the air in that area. It's crazy.
Well, I've been wondering, and so now I'm glad I know now.
Well, hey, I will say this. The business owners were on the news. They're going to rebuild all new shops. So good for them. I'm very happy.
All right. Well, we have a great show in store for you today. Coming up later, we talk to KB. He's got a new album coming out this week. So we talked about that. We also have, at the end of the show, just like the last couple weeks, story time with Jesse. I think this might be the last one. Be the last one. So we got some good
ones. Probably for the best.
We got some good ones stored up.
Can't wait.
But stay tuned. Up next, it's Slices.
Please tell me. I've been on this road for way too long now. No sense of direction, I've been lost for a while. Scared of moving closer towards the end of the road. Only you can steer this hearted heart. Only you can steer this hearted heart. We can take it slow. 'Cause I was moving faster than I ever had before. Distracted by the mess, now I don't wanna miss.
You're listening to Mally Music. The song is True Love. Not sure what's next after college? Ready to step out of your comfort zone and into something meaningful? Check out the Global Ambassador Program from ELIC. You'll spend 9 months, September to May, on a team of passionate people just like you in Thailand, Tunisia, or Uzbekistan. You'll grow through mentorship, take language classes, immerse yourself in a new culture, and teach English to the local community, all while building real-life skills and making a real impact. Sound good? Head to elic.org/relevant to learn more. Again, that's elic.org/relevant. Okay, it's time for
Slices.
What do you have, Jesse?
All right. As listeners of this show and people in my life know, I'm a big advocate of the restaurant chain Taco Bell. I eat there all the time. It's very economical and delicious. But they are the subject of a lawsuit. And I got to say, I feel like the plaintiffs in this suit have some merit here, but I also think this would create a dangerous precedent for a lot of fast food chains. A customer has filed a class action lawsuit arguing that the marketing practices at Taco Bell are unfair and deceptive, basically, he submitted as evidence photos from the marketing materials on the menu for a Crunchwrap Supreme, as well as a Grande Crunchwrap, which shows the tortilla brimming with ingredients like ground beef, you know, perfectly oozing out cheese, generous portions of lettuce, tomato, and sour cream, and then he has pictures of a cross section of actual Grande Crunchwrap and Crunchwrap Supremes, which looks like somebody stepped on them. he wants $5 million in damages, arguing that this constitutes false advertising. Now,
$5 million? Did you say $5 million?
Yeah.
This feels terrible.
Now again, I don't think. But again, this is for customers. This is to be spread out amongst victims of these deceptive products.
So not just for him, but he wants Taco Bell.
Exactly. Okay, I think his damages would probably be around $5. knowing the price of a Crunchwrap and the ingredients he claims were not included. Listen, I'm all about it, but I feel like if we're gonna go down this road, we got to start with the number one culprit, in my opinion, in all the fast food world, is Arby's. You look at those Arby's commercials, and that thin sliced beef is just floating down from the sky. It's about 4 inches tall burger. Look, I haven't been to Arby's in a while, but it looks like someone got a sandwich and threw it against the wall. Or had it in their back pocket and took a road trip and pulled it out. And like, here you go. Here's your roast beef. the precedent that this would set for fast food photo advertising, which I don't think it's wrong. I think, look, menu. Okay, here's another true story. One night I was at TGI Fridays. Okay.
That
this is true.
Is how a great story always starts.
There you go.
Yeah. For sure.
I don't
remember. Didn't one of y'all meet your future wife? Okay, got it.
Ex-wife. Cameron.
Yes, but
ex-wife.
Would have been your future wife at the time. Okay.
Yeah.
She was my waitress at TGI Fridays. I haven't been back since. So.
Well, I should preface. I can't remember if it was Chili's or TGI Fridays. Okay.
Chili's is a better time.
But either way, we were going around the table and everyone was ordering, and I didn't know what I wanted. I wanted something kind of healthy that night. And I opened the menu, and there was a picture of a meal on the menu. It was prominent. I mean, it was like half of the page was this image. Right. And it was a piece of grilled chicken. It had like a veggie on the side. It had a couple things. And the waitress said, and I said, you know what? I want this. And I pointed. She was like, well, that's not a real meal. I was like, what do you mean it's not a real meal? It's on the menu. It is a photo of a meal. She was like, well, that's like a lot of different stuff. I was like, well, that's what I want. That looks like the meal that I want. The one that is half the size of a page. And I was like, how much is that? And she was like, well, you have to order like three meals and then I have to assemble it in the kitchen. I was like, well, how much is it? She was like, she did. She was like, $37. I'm like, $37 to get the meal that is pictured on the menu. That is deceptive advertising as well. Like, if you're not going to offer it or you're going to, or some absurd price, don't have a large photo. Moral of the story, we'll see if once this gets to the Supreme Court, which it no doubt will.
How petty.
The Crunchwrap Supreme Court.
This dude is he's from New Jersey. I don't know if that matters. But
this isn't petty at all. This is
how petty do you have to be that you get your Mexican pizza and you're so mad that the fillings aren't good enough?
I think he's talking about
file a lawsuit.
Enough is enough. Enough is enough.
We've had enough. Thank you, Derek. We've had the American people. Like,
we've had enough.
Exactly.
Not gonna take it.
There are few restaurants that actually deliver. When you look at the photos that you see on the menu, I don't think it's wrong to demand that the photo of the item that you purchase matches what is given to you. If you're my money, I'm not giving you fake money. Don't give me a fake product. You know,
I think if they put the real photos, like they had to take photos of like, here's, you know, the person working the stand, they're making putting together the Arby's sandwich. They have to put up her photo in the drive thru. People would eat less fast food because it'd be
who ran over this? Who ran over my Mexican pizza before you gave it to me? You know what I mean? This is the whole reason that in my opinion, this is the whole reason that those little plastic Barbie kitchen tables started going in the middle of pizza boxes back in the day because too many people were getting pizzas and the cardboard were smashing the cheese and it was a whole mess and it wasn't what you paid for. Let's just fix it. Taco Bell. Let's settle. Let's settle.
Your libertarianism, I can usually predict, but you combine your libertarianism with this hardcore justice right and wrong thing.
That's right.
Where it's like a lot of libertarians are just like, hey man, que sera sera, personal freedom, I'll do what I want, you do what you want. But you have this thing that if like the food industry is deceiving us, you want to take them down. That is not very que sera sera libertarian, my friend.
No, there's still law and order. I'm not an anarchist.
Especially when it comes to your food.
I still think there should. We have to have some guardrails here. This isn't chaos, okay? Yeah. This isn't Lord of the Flies here.
This is one of them.
Yes.
For Taco Bell.
You can't.
I got it.
Fast food enterprises aren't organized crime operations where they can just do whatever they want.
Or are they?
Just because there's a lot of them. That's not what mob rule here.
I think Long John Silver's is a front. Because who goes to Long John Silver's yet they still exist?
Arby's. D's.
I'd put Arby's up there.
Not only that, Captain D's. D's is one step below Long John Silver's. Someone's eating those fish sandwiches.
Fish is like F-I-S-C-H or something, you know, like
it's Fuge.
Sean Fuge sandwich. Yeah. All right. What do you have, Jamie?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Between us all, I think I'm doing the math here. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 kids.
Just one for me.
I got two.
Two. Yeah. That would make 9, right? Because I have 4 of the most. Sure. Look at me over here. All right. Well, here's my story. My story
you're,
is...
You're quiverful.
Yeah, I'm quiverful.
That movement. You're part of the quiverful movement.
Oh, don't say that. Here's the story. 1 in 4 Gen Z and millennials are saying no to ever having a baby. All right?
Oh, wow.
A growing number of young adults are choosing to remain childless. This is from a recent survey conducted by a research agency. They said they surveyed 1,000 adults ages 18 to 34 who have yet to embark on the journey of parenthood. And only half of them said they even plan to start a family, while 1 in 4 have firmly decided against having children altogether.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they say some of the reasonings are prioritizing themselves and personal growth. Ouch.
Selfish.
47% share the financial concerns. I get it. 38% anxious about bringing a child. I get it. And then environmental concerns were 35%. And then there's also like career aspirations.
Hold on, these numbers are not adding up. How is 49 plus 35?
Sorry. You're right.
When they say the chunk that says, I don't want to ever have kids, they say, what are your reasons? And so you can select multiple reasons. So,
right.
Gotcha.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm like, this math ain't math. And I mean, I went to public school, but something is off to me.
But
4,000% of people agree.
Right. But in the same survey, I found this interesting. Despite whatever their personal decisions were, they said that 71% of them shared that they feel pressured by society to have children, with 40% of those saying from their direct family members, like, this is just what you're supposed to do. You know, you have kids. So it's interesting. The survey also, you know, the reporting said that, you know, if you're 25, this could change at 35. But interesting, you know, like, I always say, like, I have 4 children. I love being a mom. I'm happy to have kids. All the things, I would have kids all over again. But there is one thing I would go back and tell my younger self before having kids. I think you don't know how expensive children are.
Ooh.
And like, here we are. We've got 1 going to college, 2 more, you know, and like, even dumb things like everyone needs new shoes. You know how much money that is a month to get everybody new shoes? Yeah. So like, I'm always just want to tell young parents, it's great. Have all the children you want. Just know that they don't cost anything right now. And in 15 years, you're spending thousands upon dollars.
Well, in 15 years, that kid can work. That's what I had to do. My mom, after 12 years old, my mom made me work all summer long to save up to buy my own school clothes. Like, to teach me responsibility.
I have a 9-year-old and I have an 11-year-old. My 9-year-old wears a 10 or a 10 and a half, and my 11-year-old wears an 11.
Wow.
And they eat everything in the refrigerator as soon as you put it in there. I mean, as soon as it goes in, it's gone.
Our grocery budget is just... It's ridiculous. It's crazy.
My 10-year-old son ate 5 hot dogs the other night. With buns.
Yeah, this is our life. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyhow,
I get it.
And I know Cohen is tearing up the refrigerator because that dude, last time I saw him, he shot up, voice all deep. You know what I'm saying? Dude.
I mean, Jesse just saw him. He's size 12 shoes.
Yeah, man.
He's tall as me. He'll be 6'3".
Yeah.
He's still growing. He's like, literally, we'll eat dinner. I'll make a big dinner. I'll give him way more portion than me. And he'll be like, oh, I'm so full. I swear to you, 20 minutes later, he's in the kitchen grabbing chips and salsa. I'm like,
my kids are eating another meal at midnight. Yeah, the boys are eating another meal like before they go to bed at midnight.
He's like,
isn't it crazy too? The younger you are, the more food you want, and the less that it's on you. And the older you are, the less food you eat, and the more that food affects you. Like,
my son's 10 years old. He's part of multiple class action lawsuits against fast food chains. That's how bad this has gotten.
All right. Well, there you go. Well, Gen Z, that's going to be interesting with population shift and all that stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also, I mean, a lot of people are having kids later in life as well. I mean, you know, so that's interesting too.
But it's also the American thing, the American population inevitable decline with other countries prioritizing large families. It's going to be interesting to watch global dynamics in the future generations just from population shifts. Anyway. All right. What do you have, Derek?
Well, Gen Z, fact that you're not getting married, it could be some of those things, and it also could be the experts say that y'all are ugly.
This is crazy.
There's a
report. Gen Z out here catching strays, man. I just want to go on the record. I think I love Gen Z.
Hey, I didn't say nothing.
We love you.
You know what I'm saying? I love you. I think, you know, I love you just the way you are. But experts are saying that y'all are ugly. And
it's true.
But is that what it says? Or is it says?
If you look at high school pictures, from multiple generations prior, if we're talking about the standard of beauty, which is symmetry of the face and all of these different things, they're saying that Gen Z, that there's not a lot of symmetry for
it. The studies show that every generation is getting uglier.
And yeah, so it's not a Gen Z problem.
No, Gen Z is just now the next one, the current ugliest generation.
There's a generation before then. Like the what is it cut off? Like 15 or something? Look,
yeah.
I think the headline is symmetry of face is in. You know, progressive decline. Gen Z's caught in the middle here. They're not even the youngest anymore.
But I think what's interesting out of this whole thing is the reason why they're saying these things are happening. And they're saying it's diet, environment. So all of those things coming into play is what's actually making us out of shape in a sense. You know, so with the air quality, the way that you breathe actually affects your facial structure as a growing child, right? Or just the things that you eat, the processed foods that we eat, the way that we chew and all of those different things, it's actually affecting how we look. So it's not just external global warming, but we're also having a global uglying. Because of the way that our food
Think about Gen X moms, pregnant ladies going to Chi-Chi's on a Friday night. She says, non-smoking, please. She's two seats away from the smoking section. She's taking in all that smoke, and those little millennial or Gen Z babies came out all looking all funky because of all that smoke and stuff, Gen X. So.
Look, I just agree to disagree here. I look at my face every day, and I'm shocked at how well it's holding up, and I'm the type of person that gets passionate about Taco Bell lawsuits. So I don't know, science. You tell me. You take a look at this
science
mug.
Sucks, man.
And you look at how much Taco Bell I eat, and you know, I guess there's a bell curve, but you know,
in the data,
you know what I'm saying. I'm
the
just
Taco
saying.
Bell curve.
I'm just saying, I just refuse to believe the science. I hear your science and I reject it, because that's what we do these days. We select the science we want, and I just don't believe this. You're beautiful, Gen Z. Keep doing you. That's what I say.
All right. Well, that'll do it for Slices. Make sure to check out relevantmagazine.com, because actually all three of those stories are ones we published in the last week. All right. Stay tuned. Up next, KB joins us. Listening to Jungle, the song is Back on 74. She was a chronic people pleaser with an unfulfilling career in Hollywood until she surprised everyone by joining a convent. Equal parts tell all and rallying cry, Sister Monica Claire's memoir, A Change of Habit, reveals how much we stand to gain when we fully embrace our authentic selves. Sister Helen Prejean says it's, quote, for anyone who needs a little love, a little faith right now. A Change of Habit, Leaving Behind My Husband, Career, and Everything I Owned to Become a Nun by Sister Monica Claire is available now wherever books are sold. Well, our guest today is KB. He's an author, speaker, and one of our favorite Christian hip-hop artists. He's dropping his brand new album, His Glory 2, this week. So we sat down with Emily to tell us all about the purpose behind the album and how his music has helped him navigate faith and life. Here's our conversation with KB.
So I don't need a rose, but I might push a phantom that's right off the lot. I know I'm serving the father of time, and that's whether I got on a paddock or not. Canada goose for the cold, and they told me to count on my blessings. I counted a lot, stashing my treasure in heaven, where it'll get better and don't gotta weather the rock.
Educated the second, that's rapper, that's reverend. They started with Jesus, but I never left it. Think they protected, we tear down your hedges. I gave you the book, but you boys never read it. Don't need your credit, you cannot check on my dress. It's still swinging, I'm Eddie from Tekken. Come to the message, I keep it consecutive.
Damian Lillard for three. If they pass it to me, I turn
it. Is your first studio album in 3 years.
Yep.
What's been going on in recent years?
Yeah, so a lot of, you know, ups and downs with the pandemic. So, you know, we're out on the road, and then we're snatched off the road, and then we're kind of integrating back, but then it might be too soon. So it feels like, you know, on paper it's 3 years, but it feels a lot shorter than that because of that period of time is included 2 years of a global pandemic. So I dropped my HGA one in at the end of 2020, but we really didn't get to tour it until about 2022, the end of 2022. And that was when we were kind of we could safely go out and do the thing that we do. So so yeah, it's been, you know, time has been suspended to some degree, but I've been continuing to grow and obviously living in this, you know, Lord willing, post-pandemic world. And so a lot of maturing was required to get to where we are right now. And I have been trying to hone in on my craft and discern what it is that God would have me say that I would be adding to people's lives, not just, you know, putting stuff out because I'm supposed to. All of that kind of culminated into HGA 2.
Tell them the real drop, all on the gram. I'm just a fisherman whenever my reels drop. And then I whoop, yeah, big shots. Look at my life, we made it, the curses are gone. Now I'm giving your kids bops, and it don't stop. Dead man, great, my natural habitat. KB, I was on the corner blowing cabbage packs. Chasing newer models every year like Cadillac. To the spirit raiding my whole tomb like Laura Croft. Yeah, I woke alive, ain't no changing my mind, no, it had to be gone.
Would you say that this is like a continuation of first HGA, or is this like project new in a lot of ways?
I think it's a continuation. It's conceptually still building on this idea of the all-encompassing, you know, wonder, power, and might of the glory of God and what it means for people that obsess over it. That concept is continued into this album, but it's a lot more vulnerable. I think that I'm also showing the glory of God in brokenness, not just in like the glory of God in, you know, championship victories or, you know, standing against some kind of, you know, attack from whoever. But there are unique ways in which God uses our affliction, our limitations, you know, the ways in which we might have been injured as children, that God has a miraculous way of using those elements to write more powerful stories. I think that's what this album is.
You know, I don't want to give away too much, but what are some of the things that you go into in your personal life on this album?
Yeah, I think one of the big pieces is I talk about I'm wrestling with my being a father and who has been fatherless. And I'm wrestling with that dynamic. You know, you're always the same age on the inside. And there are things that I went through, we call them daddy wounds, that I would have, you know, thought that I was above, you know, especially being a father. You start feeling like, I don't need a father, I am a father. But there's still a child inside of you that went through something That is still animating many of the ways you feel, or some of the actions you might find yourself, kind of carrying out. Those things need to be brought to the feet of Jesus, and they don't get there unless we talk about them. I think in that that's one of the main ways where I get vulnerable about the limitations and the challenges of my story. And I also in the album, I try to sit with those who've went through a global pandemic, and on the other end of it, it wasn't like, glad that's over. We're still living out the effects of tremendous loss, from friendships to literal life loss, to economic loss. We're still putting the pieces back together. So I'm also giving folks songs that help them do that. I would live for the dreams at the top, believe me. I was woken up, I couldn't speak. I heard the king's speech. Christ Jesus got me through this bittersweetly. I was down to die for this, so canceling is easy. Did this shit for years, even when no one respected it. All these knives in my back, I probably built a set with it. Healing set up backwards, so I don't stay upset with it. Crossing for the crown, yeah, I already accepted it. Suffer for what's right and honor, I am out here flexing it. You weren't way too.
How have you personally, like, processed those things, and what have you done to deal with those things?
I think that a continual kind of challenge for me is not becoming over reliant on my abilities, my ability to be spiritual, my ability to be insightful, or my ability to be smart, or to read someone who is smart and articulate what they're saying, my ability to manage, relationships and manage people. It's very easy to get very confident in those things, and then to find that you are not in control. You are, in fact, and the more you grow, the older you get, the more you learn of how not in control you are. Especially when people's, your own body and the body of other people's are breaking down around them, without warning. We are, control is a myth. And I think that for me, I am taking that truth that I am not in control. I can't control things. I am dependent in a lot of ways. And one of those dependencies that I am unashamed of is on community, the counsel of the godly. So good friends, good wise men and women that I can confide in, and also a good therapist. I have consumed my life in those realities, community, friendships, spiritual advisory from shepherds and leaders, and good therapy. And I understand that, I thought about this the other day, that it's kind of a privilege to that, to be able to have that. Part of it is worked on, right? Because community, you kind of got to earn that to some degree. A lot of long years of working and walking through stuff with people, it gives you a rich friendships. But as I think about the ability to pick up the phone and call three or four, people that are invested in me personally, not everybody has that. And same thing with therapy. If your insurance doesn't pay that, you're out of pocket. My insurance doesn't pay for it, so I am out of pocket. With that, it's expensive, and I realize that those, I don't know where I would be without those things. And there's so many people out there that are walking through this stuff alone, and they're hurting like anyone else would be. And so I'm also, as I'm talking about these things, I'm also having to do it with my hat in hand, and seeing that the Lord has been very, very gracious to allow me these resources. But I'm also wanting to be an advocate for churches, for our government, for insurance companies, to see this with the seriousness of being able to have to support doctors of the soul, along with doctors of the body.
It's so interesting. I love hearing just specifically men open up about therapy, because I feel like for so long it was women going to therapy. I'm curious, why do you feel like men struggle more with going to therapy?
I think men have been socialized to not be in touch with their emotions. I think a part of the socialization in our country is the with from manism to misogynoir and toxic masculinity, all of those buzzwords is all intersected into a man's experience in this land. I think when we say stuff like women are emotional, men are rational, you don't give great thought to some of the most emotionally regulated people that I know are women, and some of the most unregulated, uncontrolled. I don't know of a woman. I haven't heard of many women who someone stepped on their heels and they shot the woman or the person that did it. You know what I'm saying? Or someone looked at them wrong and now I'm ready to go spend the weekend in jail. There's been a kind of, the dealing with the inner expressways and highways of our emotions is something that we see that women do. We handle our issues with just sucking it up or putting up our fists in metaphorically or literally. And I think that that's a massive mistake. And men are falling behind in dramatic ways, largely to do with the ways in which we have not valued what is going on inside of our souls and how the society also doesn't value it. You're not encouraged to take days off to get some mental health together, or you're not supported in the event that there's a major change in your life. Your wife has a baby now, and now there's a whole dynamic of what this means for your family. Should you be present for those kind? No, you should be out working. And I understand that there's some truth to that, but I think that taking the suffering of men, because I'll tell you what. It is our men that are walking in the schools and shooting them up, in the public places and shooting them up. It is our men who are taking their own lives at a rate that has exceeded all the major wars in modern history putting together. You put all the deaths of men from the major wars, the AIDS epidemic, you put all that together. Men are taking their own lives at higher rates than all of that. And because that is an issue of mental health, it's a crisis that we have to be serious about approaching. So I appreciate men who we see traditionally as strong, who are athletes or fighters or leaders, that are publicly saying, hey, the most courageous thing that I've done all year is that I looked my wife in my face and said, I need help. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's courage. That's manliness. That is strength. And I think that I think we need to talk more about that. And that's why I don't bristle or hesitate to talk about how I have been able to heal and grow and what my regimen has been for many years now. I say, come see what I do in my city. From cooling with Kendrick to walking through Romans with people in prison. Let me stop talking, cause man, I've been did it. Can't let my left hand on my right position. Y'all just don't have to see when I transition. I can't tell it all, man. Let's go.
That was KB. Stay tuned. Up next, it's Story Time with Jesse. You're listening to Del Water Gap. The song is Coping on Unemployment.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Okay, well, for the last few weeks on our Tuesday show, we've gone to you. We've crowdsourced this. We've asked you for some of your favorite all-time Jesse stories that he hasn't really shared in this current era of the podcast. We've been doing this since 2005. There's a lot of stories that have happened over the years, but since, you know, COVID, he hasn't really kind of relived some of the hits. So we asked you, what are your favorite Jesse stories? And we're going to lob a few to him so he can tell Derek and Jamie, because they haven't heard some of these. All right, Jesse,
This is one of my favorite parts of the show.
I love this.
I don't even lie.
I'm glad you guys like it.
So
me misremembering things that happened about 15 years ago.
Our podcast software now transcribes everything, you know, automatically, and it had this huge update, so much more accurate. And Emily sent me a transcript that she was going through from last week's show during this segment, and it literally says Cameron, and there are 93 ha's. It's like ha 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 ha. That's how it transcribed me because of this segment. So there you go.
I love it.
All right, here you go, Jesse. The Izzard of Waz, AP Waz, said, I need to hear about the air horn zip line again. Do you remember this?
I do.
Air horn zip line.
So in college, we would, I don't know why, but we would like to torment other dorm floors on campus. And we found that the best way to do that was to wake them up in the middle of the night. And the best way to do that is, well, first there were trash chutes that went all the way down, like throughout the building. It basically create like a big echo.
And so the entire building is concrete block and tile floors. So it's,
yeah. And so at night, like during the day, we would drop like a string down the trash chute, go to the floor we wanted to open it and cut the string. So we do the exact length of the string to get down to another floor. And we would put air horns with rubber bands on them so that it suppressed the air horn till the air horn is totally out, and drop them down. So it would just dangle perfectly at their floor level. So we mastered the art.
Like Mission Impossible, like Tom Cruise.
Evil geniuses, bro.
So we mastered the art of like air horning every floor in our building. But the problem was we didn't know how to get it. We didn't know how to do it to floors in other buildings. Till one night, we were on the top floor. We were on the seventh floor the eighth floor. I don't know. We're on the top floor of a dorm tower. And we really wanted, it was a particular room in another building that was like across a parking lot that we really wanted to wake up in the middle of the night, that we had a real feud in for. And we constructed a zip line and had someone go out and actually so it was basically a string. And we had somebody, we tied it around a football or something, and that person, and we had someone throw that onto someone's balcony in the middle of the night. So it's basically a string going across a parking lot onto someone else's balcony. We sent a barrage of air horns with rubber bands on them, with carabiners ziplining down in the middle of the night. So just one air horn after the other would land on their balcony. Just and because it's down, they can't send them back. Like, it's going all the way. So in the middle of the night, and you just see on a balcony of another dorm, like seven air horns just blasting for the duration. And then we just cut the zip line. Yeah, it was pretty good.
That parking lot, if it's the two buildings I'm thinking of, is the parking lot where campus security's headquarters was.
What are they going to do? It was, what are they going to do? It's four stories up. What are you going to throw scissors up there?
Did you get caught?
Half a spool of kite. Huh?
Wow. Did you get caught?
It doesn't take long to zip line seven air horns down a kite string. Okay. We were done and gone before security even knew what hit them. All they know is there's about 7 to 9 air horns blasting on some poor guy's balcony on his dorm at 3 a.m. during finals week.
What did you
have
against this guy? Like, why did you want to do this to him?
Honestly, I don't recall. The grievances were minor.
The way ORU has it on campus stuff is it's a residential campus. You have to live in dorms. And so they would do dorm wings, were kind of like a team, almost like a mini frat kind of a thing. And you'd play intramurals against other wings, other teams. And so like the rivalries would form. And so literally like you would just be pranking your rival dorm wings all year long, you know? So,
So.
That's crazy.
All right. Ben Stroop wants to know, or he said, I can't forget about Satan doing announcements at church.
Oh,
I think I've heard that one.
This one actually got me.
This one. I'm ready for it.
I used to do stand-up comedy. Well, I can't remember how it started. I used to do announcements at the church I went to, and it was me and one other guy, and we basically turned it into stand-up comedy hour, and we would just make jokes about, you know, whatever the events were.
So worship just ended. People have been praying. They're crying. Mm-hmm. They're in the presence of God.
Ministry's
is there,
happening.
And Jesse walks out.
Doing like women's retreat jokes, okay? Like it was great. It was like
honestly, though, here's the deal. Some of those are so boring. You want people to like be engaged and stuff.
Thank you. It was like I remember one was like, you know, the women's retreats, mending your roots is coming up, and I was like, what's? Don't forget the men's retreat, frosting your tips. Am I right, everyone? Come on now. Let's wrap it up here, up in front. Whatever you guys are praying about, we need to. I'm doing material here. But I was helping out with the youth group thing, and there was they asked me to. It was like one of those like human video skits where, you know, there are people with various vices and they pray, and someone in like a white robe comes out and does like a kung fu matrix fight with someone who's dressed as the devil as like a spiritual illustration, right? That they do on like mission trips. And they asked me in the youth group, because I volunteered at the youth group at the time, if I would portray the devil.
I said to be the devil.
No, they asked me, and I said I'll do it on one condition, because this skit was going to take place before the announcements, and I said I still get to do the announcements, but I get to do it as the devil. And they were like, okay, sure, why not? And
they never knew it was coming.
The pastor didn't know. I just said that this was like the people over the youth group. And again, I was like, all right, I will do the human video. I will be your devil. But I get to go right up and do the announcements. And so they're like, all right, sure, you know. And so... So like we do the video, we do like the dramatic thing, and they do like the explanation of the spiritual illustration, and their pastor comes up and he's like, all right, it's time for announcements. And I like grab the mic all angry, and I'm like, all right, Vacation Bible School's coming up, but don't send your kids. Why don't you just keep them at home this year and watch Harry Potter movies? And I did anti-announcements. I tried to talk people out of coming to all the church events because I was the devil, right?
Yeah.
I was talking about how aggrieved I was at these different
people had just gotten saved up front, and he was come out.
And I thought it was funny because all
what
of them
is
were like that.
Your brain, right?
He was like, "Look, I'm the devil. I'm going to announce that what you shouldn't go to that week." I thought it was funny.
Yeah. Crazy. Perfect.
So anyway, I went out of town. I actually went on. I went and helped out on a youth mission trip, and I came back like 2 weeks later, and I went to like a church barbecue, and people were looking at me weird. And I was like, what's going on? I've been out and, you know, doing this, you know, working with these churches out in Nepal, like literally Nepal and like the countryside of Kathmandu for the last 2 weeks. And I get back at the church barbecue and everyone's kind of giving me weird vibes. And the pastor comes up, he's like, yeah, so a lot of people were very offended. The main complaint was that you grieved the Holy Spirit. So we're going to have to suspend you from announcements for a while. I'm like, what? You can't suspend me. Because I'm not doing them. Guess what?
I quit.
I'm unsuspendable. I quit. You can't fire me from announcements. It's a true story.
Oh, I can see where they might be coming from. Might be a little harsh.
Lighten up.
I would have found it hilarious. I ain't going to even lie.
That's so funny. All right,
that would have went over so good at my church, bro, for real.
Yeah.
All right, last one. Brendan says, monkey son. I've been looking behind my back ever since I heard about that monkey, episode 609, last 10 minutes. So, monkey son.
I won't do the full 10-minute version, but basically, I had a friend in college, and one day I was like walking through the dorms, and he was just sitting in his room, and he looked kind of shaken up. And I was like, hey, man, what's going on? I knew he had like a new girlfriend. And he was like, yeah, he's like, listen, man, I just don't think things are going to work out. He's got a weird family situation. I'm just trying to figure out how to deal with this. I was like, a weird family, you know, and I'm thinking it's something dramatic. You know what I mean? Like, you know, family drama. And he's like, yeah, he's like, her dad has a monkey son and things have gotten weird.
What?
I'm like, he's like, so I go over there to meet her family, and her father has a pet monkey that he is raising as a son. As a member of the family.
Wasn't it an orangutan?
Yeah, it was a large monkey. It wasn't a small monkey. It wasn't
Orangutans are not like a Ross and Rachel monkey. No,
it wasn't like a pickpocket hilarious monkey that dances and has little symbols and juggles and stuff. Yeah. Okay.
This isn't illegal, right? This probably is.
Anyway, he's like, so the first time I go in there, he's like, the dad, I'm introduced to the family and the son, and he's like, you got to introduce me to the monkey. The monkey's very territorial, this particular species. And the monkey, it is like bred in the jungle. Like this monkey, this species of monkeys kills the weakest member of the family as like an evolutionary, biological, weird thing about this monkey. That means the daughter, this monkey just has a deep hatred for. Okay, just is bred into it. So anyway, he goes down there and the dad's like insistent that he meets the monkey. Okay, so he goes down the first day and he says like the monkey's in a cage. Okay. And he's like, as the dad's talking about his love for this monkey, the monkey reaches out and I guess the monkey was not feeling the boyfriend. The monkey reaches out and grabs the dad by the top of the head with one hand and starts squeezing it. And the dad's trying to play it off like this is a normal thing, but clearly he's getting his head squeezed by a giant monkey hand. He's like, yeah, he's just, you know, he's great. He does it sometimes. Don't worry about it. And eventually freed himself. And so he's a little shaken up, right? So anyway, he goes and he takes his girlfriend out to dinner. His girlfriend's like, hey, there's a bad situation with the monkey. Things are getting out of hand. And he's like, she's like, something very bad happened. And he's like, okay, well, tell me what happened. She's like, well, you know, sometimes he can get out. And the other night I was in the family office room and I was doing homework and I was on the computer and I can see in the reflection in the doorway behind me, over my shoulder, the monkey is just standing there. Like, and she's thinking, like, don't panic, but there's a monkey that hates me standing in the doorway, planning his next move. So she's like, I'm not going to turn around because I don't want to, but she's like, she goes, there was a letter opener next to me. And she's like, I put my hand on what, knowing I'm about to fight a monkey to the death here in the family office. Like, it is going to go down. This could be it right here. And she's like, just preparing for when the monkey charges, that she's going to kind of do a kung fu move. All of a sudden, she's looking in the mirror. She's looking in the screen, like in the reflection. She sees her dad come around the corner, and he's standing now behind the monkey. Okay, and they're sort of, this is a Mexican standoff. They don't know, you know, the monkey doesn't know the dad standing behind him. She sees her dad slowly remove his leather belt, wrap it around his hand, and just rear back and smack the monkey across the back. And she said the monkey just went, yeah! It was enough time for him to wrestle the monkey, throw it in the cage, and she ran away.
What's going on? Dog.
He said there was too much monkey drama in that family. He had to break up with her, and it was
How did you grow up, dog? Like what? Where
is this? This is his friend. This did not happen. Like, what kind of that guy?
Your circle of people that you grew. I don't know anyone that has anything beyond a dog or a cat. You know someone that had a whole orangutan. Like, I don't, like, what circle of people?
Oh, he didn't have it anymore.
Also, what kind of dad is like, I'm going to keep this monkey even though it wants to kill my daughter?
Like I said, there was a reason they broke up. It was too much family drama.
Yes, I would advise you to run if your girlfriend's father has a monkey son.
Some people have marital drama. Some people have, you know, relational drama. This one had monkey drama, and you just don't want that in your relationship. You know,
if I could go back in time and grow up with anybody, I would want to grow up with Jesse. I'm just going to keep it honest with you.
Well, you know who did grow up with Jesse is Sean Foyt. So,
yeah. That's his name?
Yeah. So you don't.
I actually do have quite a number of stories.
Oh, yeah, maybe that's what we need to do is do some Sean Foyt stories next week. All right. Anyway. All right. So that'll do it for this week's story time with Jesse. Well, before we wrap things up, I want to thank KB for joining us. Make sure to check out his new album, His Glory 2. Also, check out the summer issue of Relevant. It's out now. We've got great conversations with faith leaders like Christine Kane, Judah and Chelsea Smith, artists like Lauren Daigle, Arizona, and a lot more. You can read it for free. Just click on the magazine tab over at relevantmagazine.com. If you want the beautifully designed enhanced digital edition, it's part of your Relevant Plus subscription. You get ad-free unlimited reading at the website. You get an ad-free version of this podcast, an exclusive weekly subscriber podcast, and our beautiful digital issue chocked full of enhancements. Go check it out. Plans start as low as $2.50 a month. All the info is right there at relevantmagazine.com. It's the best way to experience our content. Also, hey, we're hiring. Right now, we are looking for an audio video editor for this show and social media. We're also looking for a social media content manager. If you want to check out all of our openings, you can head over to relevantmediagroup.com. Relevantmediagroup.com is where our jobs are. Okay, on that note, we'll wrap it up. I'm Cameron Strang.
I'm Jesse Carey.
I'm Derek Miner.
I'm Jamie Ivey.
All right, we'll see you on Friday. Have a great week, everyone.
For listening to the Relevant Podcast. Check out our features, interviews, and news updates every day at relevantmagazine.com. And make sure to follow Relevant on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest. For more great podcasts, browse the shows on the Relevant Podcast Network, which you can find at our site. And while you're there, don't miss the all-new era of Relevant Magazine. A new issue releases every other month at relevantmagazine.com.
Yeah, he's just, you know, he's a...
Relevant Podcast Network.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion or your first big lightning strike. There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Family's agents. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.